The Protect Your Neck Podcast, UFC Stockholm Breakdown. Savages, this is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, and I am your host, Dan Tom, analyst and writer for MixedMartialAnalyst.com, and we are back. That's right, we're back on many levels, but more importantly, back to break down some high-level MMA. We have UFC Stockholm in Sweden this weekend, Sunday card. So we're going to go ahead and get this out to you. It is Wednesday. By the time it'll be uploaded, it'll probably be the wee hours of Thursday for East Coasters. Yeah, I was supposed to have it out by today, but I'm gonna spare you the excuses because it is comical. Me and the girlfriend were actually just having a laugh out of it. She was just laughing at me, like not being mean laughing at me, but like it's because it's all you can do at this point. It's so comical, and believe me, the last thing I'm gonna do, someone very privileged and complain about first world problems. I have lucky enough to have a platform to complain. Believe me, that's not what I'm going to turn this into. But you do have to kind of laugh at a certain point when things get so bad, where just not so bad, but just so comical that it just feels like I'm in the Truman Show. Like one thing after another. Like I just, one of these days, folks, you are going to hear, this was a normal week for Dan Tom. Dan Tom put in 40 hours of work and got 40 hours of results. Instead of what it has been. Thankfully, you know, again, I'm not going to complain. You know, it was a cancer scare. If you were following me on Twitter with the dog again, you know, we had the recent cancer scare and his face was lumped up. Thankfully, it was just allergies. He got in a fight with a bug. So again, these are lesser of evils. I'm very grateful. I'm in a good place, But man, I am a bit sleep deprived. The Junkie Gathering is in town, which is a positive. That is a positive distraction. So there are positives. That's another reason why I'm not complaining, because man, it was so freaking awesome to see. Wait. First of all, what the fuck is a Junkie Gathering, Danny? You've been drinking, yes, but that's besides the point. Junkie Gathering, MMA Junkies, you know, the outlet. MMA Junkie Radio, as you know, the longtime podcast, now Sirius XM radio show, formerly of Tag Radio, but Gorgeous George and Goes Garcia have been doing it for 10 years as they're celebrating a decade. What other motherfuckers have been doing it for a decade, much less a five-day-a-week show? And yes, they do all the things that you love in MMA shows, from interviews and all that good stuff. But what kind of sets MMA Junkie Radio, just a real quick recap on what the Junkie Gathering and all this is. But what sets them head and shoulders kind of above the rest is the fan interaction, where not just embracing callers, giving them airtime, but to the point where these almost callers become their own characters in the show. And they all have their little quirks. And a lot of these people are really quite funny. And I become fans of them just from listening to the show over the years. And I used to call into the show back in the day, you know, when I ran a construction site and I would sneak away and call in and give my predictions. It was funny, my first call into the show, I don't even know if I ever told Gorgeous Joe Jagoz this, but I prank called for like UFC 115. I think that's what it was, because that was White Gorilla Festival, right? That was Shane Carwin versus Brock Lesnar. And I pretty much broke down the main card as Christopher Walken. Yeah, it was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, it was just a really kind of a wild show that's kind of evolved over the years. And about 9 years ago, the hosts were like, fuck it, let's people come in town and visit the studio. They have a really nice studio in Mandalay Bay right in the Racing Sports Book. And they just started making an event out of it about 8-9 years ago. Usually doing fight week, you know, this Memorial Day weekend is a traditional fight weekend in Vegas. Obviously, we kind of had a shuffle up a couple months ago, beginning of the year. But yeah, nonetheless, we still did it and have a lot of fun events. You know, we had a flag football game versus my gym, Extreme Couture. I was not there. Old Dan Tom was adulting and working. But I'm on UFC 212 right now. I'm so excited, by the way. That's what I've been breaking down this week. So that's what I've been kind of balls deep and trying to stay ahead on. So again, working hard, but man, seeing some fun times. So I was just kind of real eager seeing all these events. You know, they go to, you know, beer park and escape room and do all these fun things in town. So I was kind of just itching to meet up with these people. Some I've seen, before, you know, John Rico, Chili Billy McDonald, etc., so on and so forth. But then there's people that I haven't met, like, you know, Hal from Chicago, who I'm a big fan of, and just a whole bunch more that, Brandon from Louisville, and I don't even want to start naming because I'm going to leave out names. So I came to the show this morning, Wednesday morning, and, after I posted the breakdown and stuff. So I got my breakdown on time. I hopefully, you know, y'all were able to get that. But I went to the show this morning and I brought a bunch of beer because, you know, it's 10 a.m. in Vegas. What do? You drink beer? Well, my plan wasn't to, but Dan Tom ended up having one or two. But I did my due diligence and I built Cosby the fuck out of some people because Dan Tom brought some really good craft beers from Vegas, just kind of as a good gesture. There were some fellow beer snobs in the audience, and if not, who doesn't like beer? Who doesn't like good beer? And especially, casino price can be a little steep out here in Vegas if y'all been out here. So I come in like fucking Desperado, El Mariachi, you know, the scene, and he shows the shoes and it pans up, and except it's, instead of a guitar case full of guns, it's a dirty Whole Foods bag full of beer. But let's neither here nor there. I was smart and I strategically put the wheats and all the soft stuff, you know, up top because people like that stuff. And all the stuff Dan Tom likes, the Imperial Stouts and the double IPAs, kind of mixed in at the bottom so people are grabbing and they don't realize that it says a 13% on the side of the can there. We had some good times, ended up going to the burger bar after the show. And, I came back and, you know, I was going to knock out the podcast I get halfway through and again, kind of relaying back to the thing, not trying to make excuses or complain. I don't want to turn this because it seems like it's every week. It's ridiculous. It's as someone who hates excuses, I vehemently hate excuses. I feel like that's what I'm bringing to the show every week. So not that they're excuses. I'm still, you know, delivering as far as, you know, analysis or my takes, if that's what you're listening for or whatever. I guess that's the main service of the show, right? And it's free, so whatever. But anyways, you know, as far as just, you know, because it was funny, I was at, you know, fraternizing with all the junkies, all the people, you know, that came in, you know, came in across town for the gathering. And someone was, I can't remember who it was, but like, hey, you ever do an episode where you're not tired and or drunk, Dan? It was funny, but no, it was all in love. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's more the tired thing than anything. And this was kind of no different. But it wasn't. Yeah, man, I was coffeeed, alpha brained up. I had none of those excuses. Was sober. Just came off a nice lunch, had a nice coffee, fired up. I laid out a really nice killer half. Man, I killed the first half of the prelims. Laid it down. And, you know, we cut to the mid-commercial break as we do in the Pateki Neck podcast. I hit pause, and I literally go to hit my Command S. You know, I'm working off of Apple laptop here to save, and it freezes, and I'm like, oh no. And the Kool-Aid guy busted the wall. Oh yeah, no, I'm just kidding, that didn't happen. But what did happen was the computer screen just went, pew, powered down. I'm like, motherfucker. And when it powered back up, the episode was still there, so there was hope. But even though the episode was there, the content within was gone. And like that, whew, it's gone. Sorry, I blew into the mic there. But yeah, it was really sad. So I was just beside myself, tired, and like an old, tired, crabby old man I am, I took a nap. I ate some food. I listened to the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 soundtrack, and I'm a new man. I'm back. Rejuvenated somewhat and ready to lay it down. So again, sorry for the long-winded thing, but it's knock on wood, I'm gonna be like hitting Command S and like saving throughout this goddamn thing. But it's been a hell of a month, and I think Dan Tom, I said this last week, so man, I'm gonna stop saying, actually I'm not even gonna say I'm due for regularity. I'm just gonna stop giving it attention, the negativity, the coincidences. Maybe there is an Ed Harris somewhere watching on a computer screen, gently caressing it, going, oh, Dan Tom, I got you right where I want you. You're right into my trap. Just kidding. No, it's probably not happening. So moving on, we're going to break down this fucking card, I promise. And another peel back behind the curtain. Dan Tom's actually going to try to use notes and odds, and because I actually am a responsible podcast host and will pull this stuff up ahead of time, but I'm also kind of a Rain Man up in my own head, and I will just go, because I literally do put the, you know, the 40 to 50 hours of you know, each weekend to whatever I'm working on, multitude of what I'm working on. So I kind of have it stored in my head, and I kind of go off that. So, you know, oh, well, that could be, you know, impressive if you that's what you're doing. And that's not how I take it. No. Because Dan Tom often messes up a lot and leaves a lot out. So I'm going to try to stick to Z notes and actually have the lines up. So we're going to start from the bottom here. Demir Hadzevic versus Marcin Held. Ooh, plus 260, Demir Hadzevic. Kind of came down from the plus 275 that I played him because he is the pick against Marcin Held. I'm pretty high on Hadzevic. I picked him against Mirabek Taisimov, which is kind of crazy in retrospect, you know, but I stand by it. Hadzevic's a very underrated talent, a real natural talent, real big for the division, good takedown defense, natural tie clinch, more like the base and balance within the tie clinch, kind of that connectivity to said takedown defense, but strikes off the breaks, always makes guys pay, has a real good sense of his hips on floating, circling, again, striking off the break, and never giving anybody anything for free. He can counter, he can strike guys on the way in, he can put combinations together, knees, kicks, punches, elbows, back against the fence, he can finish guys when his back against is the fence, or, you know, pushing guys against the fence, pressuring as he, you know, can bully guys and wear them down, which I could totally see him doing to Held, who is not the biggest lightweight, who tends to fade. And although he's more than competent in finishing high level guys outside of the first round, in this matchup in particular, I see Held more like kind of a one round knockout artist in the sense with his submission. Even though Hadzevic has good takedown defense, you know, there will be some weird entries coming his way, similar to Husamar Falhares. Marcin Held will do those kind of low single leg drop downs where he'll kind of drop down and suicide his way into a heel hook. And I love it. And, you know, we'll probably see that here. And Hadzevic will have some things to answer. I think he can, because despite his accolades being, you know, counter clinch wrestling, striking off the break, knocking out people, and being mean like a Terminator, he started in the sport with jiu-jitsu, and it's apparently his strongest suit. He just doesn't show it much. And when you do watch the brief instances that Hadzevic is on the ground, I really like what he's doing from bottom and top as far as his urgency from bottom and his control, which allows him to strike. He's doing the right things with wrist control, keeping his hips in the proper places, but also knowing when to drive forward with the shoulder pressure, turn a guy's head away. Things I really like as far as head pressure, because a guy, you'll see guys go for deep half. Granted, they weren't as skilled as Marcin Held, but Hadzevic has just a great awareness. You'll see him forearm and push the head. And when you have a scrambly guy, much less a leg lock guy, and you're trying to do analysis on, like, okay, how is this going to work out? What you want to look at is, so you have a guy going against Marcin Held. You want to look at, okay, is he controlling the head? Where the head goes, the body follows. I learned that in karate, and that's essentially the principle that's just human physics, that there's versions of that everywhere in every martial art and even in just every sport. So where the head goes, the body follows. And if you let someone get under you, they can debase you, they can sweep you, or use that space to get a leg lock, as Marcin Held likes to do, and use the leg lock to sweep you, right? So Hadzevic is just real mean about, he'll just forearm check guys right in the face when they try to, you know, dive in toward the crotchal region to get underneath their opponent and debase. He will have none of that, and will put his shoulder, turn the guy's head away, and does the things I like. I don't think I'll play like a third round. I may, depending, just for fun. Like, I'm talking about like a couple dollars just for a shit kick, because there's no other third rounds, spoiler, that I like on the rest of the card. It's going to be probably a conservative card overall. But I do like Hadzevic. I played Hadzevic. That's why I picked him. That's why he's also not on the avoid list. So it's, I'm not trying to cop out. I stick to this one. And, you know, could look silly again, you know, like I picked him against Mirabek Taisimov, who remains, God, I wish we could have seen him on this card. He remains my most frustrating guy to watch, and I'm a fan of him, by the way, so don't take any of that picking against him or the frustrating. I'm frustrated because I am a fan of Mirabek Taisimov. Just these visa issues has forced him to get shitty matchups and shitty cards where we're not seeing him, and the matchups almost don't mean a lot. But that Hadzevic icing was oof, that was money. I mean, most people don't know Demir Hadzevic, but that meant a lot. You know, this dude's never been a stop like that before, but He owned it up. Seems to appear to have the right attitude. Took time off. Been training all around. Tiger Muay Thai. Back to Rumble Sports. I have to imagine he's gotten better. Marcin Held, who's still young and still can improve. His improvements, though he has improved, has not been quite the curve I was expecting. And my expectations were not that high, mind you. So I like Hadzovic here. Long-winded, but that one was worth it. This one will keep a little shorter because it is first on the fights to avoid list. Yesen Ayari versus Darren Till. Yesen Ayari fought Judo Jimmy Wallhead in that really weird fight where I actually thought Judo Jim won. A lot of people did. And then I rewatched it and I still thought Judo Jim won and was amazed that there was a 30-27 scorecard for Yesen Ayari. Neither here nor there. As goofy as he looks, there is some deceptive things. You know, Yesen Ayari does well. You know, the uppercut hook combo slip continuum, he does very well. Could work well against a Muay Thai shelling defense of Darren Till. But if Darren Till has improved his poor man's Conor McGregor impression, he will be able to counter with his left hand. Not saying that that's what Darren Till solely does, but as far as his countering game, you know, there's a little bit of that to it. Not bad, you know. Nothing wrong with taking the inside angle there and abusing your southpaw strengths. But offensively, though, not like Conor McGregor. More traditional Muay Thai stylist, you know, loves the liver and body kicks, targets the legs, real accurate with his shot selection. And, you know, you hear the commentary talk about his kind of candor and the bravado that he brings out, and I love it, and it's very endearing. I'm weird with that, right? I'm kind of, with some people I don't like it, with some people I dig it if it's over the top or weird, and Darren Till is just that. But even as the martial art, you know, aspect goes, it's funny, like, shout out to Mike Moss, Master Tati prospect from back in the day, is a tattoo artist now, but he's the one who kind of brought me into Muay Thai and helped push me into MMA back in the day, and I would train Muay Thai in his garage, and we would just trade off. I teach him Kempo karate stuff, but really I was just trying to learn Muay Thai because Mike could kick my ass. Like, you didn't need to look up those YouTube videos where the Muay Thai guys are kicking the ass of the karate guy. Like, that was the gym sparring, that was the garage sparring sessions me and Mike had. But thankfully he was friendly. But the thing I learned, though, when you really spar with a good Muay Thai guy, and I see hints of this with Till, I imagine, you know, more of this happens in the gym when he's more playful. But from their, especially with their teeth, it's almost like they're reaching out with their hand. There's a certain dexterity they have where they're really just drilling you with the ball of your foot, and there's a certain push. And it's really hard to explain, but if you've practiced and or felt these kicks, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And Till has that kind of play with his kicks. I really like that. I favor him here, but not as much as the odds makers. Minus 350 coming back at a plus 290 for the underdog, or plus 290 for the underdog, yes, and Ayari. So not enough juice in Ayari to play that, and way too much for Darren Till, who has been out since the, what was it, Luis Smoka Paddy Houlihan card, which was originally the October 2015 Poirier Duffy booking, right? So, I mean, it's been a while since we've seen Darren Till. Not a lot on social media. Is he still in Brazil? Is he back in England? Is he biding his time between both places like he did before? Who the fuck knows? Who the fuck knows? So, on my fights to avoid, next fight is also on the avoid list. Nico Misoki versus Bojan Velikovic. Nico Misoki, we have not seen since January 2015. Gustafsson, Johnson. And but they are still favoring him here at a minus 150 with a comeback on Bojan Velikovic at plus 130. Man, again, that's a lot of confidence in Misoki, who's had injuries, the reason why he's been out. I don't know what those exact injuries are, mind you, but I do know. Excuse me. I do know he spent a little stint here at TriStar up in Canada. And that can be good and that can be bad with fighters. I've kind of talked about this before because it kind of comes down to the three things. And again, I don't know Faraz. I've never taken a class there. So I am completely speaking out of league. But based on the information from coaching, cornering, and available information in that and in-fight evidence of their fighters at TriStar, it feels like Faraz instills the basic three things into his fighters who come there. Jab fundamentals, ring generalship, and wrestling basics, right? Those are the three things, and I think Musoki, as far as the striking, is kind of was showing those. I mean, again, I was one of those people I would love to see Musoki open up more, because he did well when he opened up more. I think he lost a lot of close fights he was in, with Tumanov and Gastelum, by allowing them to pile up and gain their rhythm. So, you know, could be something to watch for, but I do like the possibility of we could see more of a wrestling effort. For Musoki, who, by the way, you know, had 2 takedowns scored against Kelvin Gastelum, and I believe that was a healthier Gastelum. Like, I believe that was a Dulce era, I made weight Gastelum, I want to say. But maybe not. Neither here nor there. He has some underrated wrestling, as does the gym that he normally trains at, as Sweden All-Stars, as far as European camps go. They really, you know, emphasize the correct fundamentals as far as wrestling, it seems like, in the recent years. So that's something worth watching. You know, there's definite pluses there, but he'll be facing Bojan Velikovic, who is fighting out of the Muscle Farm gym or whatever's going on with him, right? I think there's something changing. I don't know. There's too much news, and that's not my thing. Unless it's relevant, which actually it is to this, so I probably should know that better. But yeah, no, I did go to Boyan's social meds. Social media. Oh, you're not impressed? Benjamin's not impressed back there. Social media and, okay, he's getting up now that I mentioned his name. And yeah, you know, he's training up in Denver, and you know, Neil Magny was a main partner for him with his camp. I'm sure that'll be helpful as far as reach and range go. But you know, you want to talk about curves again. I'm not maybe higher than I was on what I'm expecting. What was I expecting on Held for sure, but still realistic. You know, as far as Bojan Velikovic goes, and it's just easy to get excited because, right, you see a long, rangy, and athletic guy. Can do a lot of things, and but at the same time, you look back at his 4 fights, and he's doing the same things. You know, he's doing the Ali, I'm circling the left hand while I hit you with the jab, and ultimately, he's throwing the same strikes, and he's ultimately still throwing in ones and twos, and I think the volume is making fights closer than they need to be, victory, defeat, or draw kind of a thing, when you look at it, and it's hurting him more often than not, right? So I agree. I got Musoki here, but avoid way too much. I think it's going to be a close kickboxing match. This is one of the more overs I'm confident on. Spoiler, I'm not too big on any of the over and unders, because a lot of these fights are fights where you could justify inside or distance, you know, or distance. So not a lot of that parlay fodder coming from Dan, that normal parlay fodder coming from Dan Tom, much less the over under plays, which I've been pretty vacant on anyways recently, if you kind of pay attention to what I usually play. But this would be one of them. But it's a -220. It's on a little bit of the higher side, but for what it's worth, probably one of the safer overs. If you wanted to have, you know, if you're doing a fun parlay where you're actually getting up to 5 legs or something crazy. I mean, a 3-leg parlay feels crazy in MMA at this point. But that's just me being jaded, right? No, just kidding. I'll do fun 5 legs for fun, but it's like no more than $5. So if you're fucking around and looking for an over, could be parlay fodder. I'm not touching that shit. All right, next one I'm not touching either on the fights to avoid. Reza Madadi versus Joaquim Silva. You know, this could be one where I should be kicking myself not playing Joaquim Silva more. Unlike another 7-0 prospect who we'll talk about later, I'm not as high on Joaquim Silva because, I don't want to use a sample size argument because it could be used in the other fight that I am referring to, which we'll get to in the main card, but I'm just still not convinced with Joaquim Silva. As far as the one loss we have seen, Joaquim Silva was in the tough house, and granted, that was against a giant Glacio Franco, who, how the fuck does that guy make 155? And, you know, he essentially took down Joaquim Silva, who, if you don't know who he is, looks like a, you know, he's 5'8". So he's like, you know, he's maybe just an inch taller, but it's like a very similar, poor man's Jose Aldo or Rafael Dos Anjos. More like a poor man's Henan Barão as far as stylistically, but looks and stature-wise, poor man Rafael Dos Anjos, Jose Aldo. And real athletic, good get-up ability. Apparently has a black belt or something like that in BJJ, but you really don't see him too confident there. In fact, you see him with that Muay Thai approach that Yoni Jacek had earlier in her career, where they're afraid to throw kicks because they don't want to be taken down. He shows a lot of that, and that's probably because I imagine that Franco lost. There's something to that. So until he can prove that against a decent opponent and fight with some consistency, because the dude's fought once in like 3 years, I am not ready to be high on the dude, but he should win here. In fact, he might be the first person to stop Madati, and I know Madati's never been stopped, but even before the El Prisione Per Snatche Escalades, Madati was getting dropped quite a ton. So this could, and at 37 or 38 or however old he is, I'm not hating on the guy or anything by saying that, by the way, the bottom's got to drop out sometime, and Joaquim Silva does look like that freakish athlete who possesses that power, and to his credit, possesses it till the third round. Now, again, if he gets against a higher level guy where he's not controlling the pace as much, maybe he won't look as good in the third rounds as he has in previous fights. But I like him here, especially, Madati, by the way, he didn't lose as badly as I thought he did when I went back to watch his recent fight with Joe Duffy. Like, I thought he was getting dropped all over the place, and he really didn't even get officially dropped once, I believe. At least he didn't get scored one. But still, I mean, it was like, what, March 18th? It wasn't that long ago. I mean, that was a lot of shots he was taking from Duffy not that long ago. So I don't like that he's jumping back in. Reza Madati does have the intangibles, looks in shape, kind of guy that's a gym rat, always training. So he, feel by the hometown. He has the intangibles to upset here for sure, or make it ugly. So for that reason, I stayed away. And I'm willing to kick myself in hindsight. So you can, question me on that one too. And I really don't blame you, but that is why it's on my stay away. The next one, however, is not. It is actually the first piece of the parlay. And I know both these guys, Trevor Smith versus Chris Camozian, both, if you are an MMA bettor, I guarantee you both have burned you before, or you're smart and both have just scared you the fuck away from betting them. But I defend Chris Camozzi, I believe he's made more curves. I mean, these are essentially, when I say more curves, because these are essentially two guys who kind of have the same tropes and, I don't want to say mistakes, but the same kind of things that kind of hold them, the same common culprits in the fight, in their fights. But I will say that although Camozzi's is a super important and relevant one, no matter the matchup, being his defensive wrestling, right, that's his critique, which is fair. I believe overall he has smaller critiques and has arguably made more improvements over the recent relevant curvature of time of his career path. Because when you look at Trevor Smith, most of his big names he lost to, and most of those big names that he lost to were even just early on his career. I mean, in fact, the more relevant parts of his career, the combat level of competition has dropped. And speaking of dropped, so has been Trevor Smith. I mean, he's been, I believe, significantly stunned and or if not dropped in like his last 5 or 6, if not, I will say 4 of 6. I mean, for a guy who has a height advantage and most of the guys he's facing at middleweight, he gets hits with uppercuts more than anybody else. And that's because of his posture. He's always leaning low, from guys like Joe Gigliotti to Andrew Sanchez, where the uppercuts might not even be their forte and they're clocking him with it. And now he's going against, Southpaw, granted, who doesn't throw the uppercut, which is Chris Camozzi. But Chris Camozzi is who's a very underrated and active long jab. In fact, I believe he might be a significant strike leader at welterweight and all-time leader as far as leg kicks. At middleweight, obviously. And an all-time leader, not just at middleweight, with leg kicks. Like, he's got a couple leg kick records as far as statistic goes. Like, Camozzi is is quietly a very effective striker and a consistent guy in that regard at winning scorecards. Wrestling, yeah, that's been his critique. But let's look back at his recent losses, because, again, is Camozzi going to go be top 10 and just start, knocking on the title door? Probably not. I hope he does. I always love underdogs like that. He seems like a great dude. But what I mean is, he has made improvements, though, right? He has made improvements, to be fair. But he lost to Talos Leydas. Like, Talos Leydas is really underrated. I'm a guy who, despite picking against Leydas incorrectly recently, I championed him prior and always been, big fan of that guy's game, or at least as far as the second renaissance of his career. And he shows he's not done yet. He's not quite done yet because, what did Talos Leydas do? He fought smart against Camozzi, and I believe that was actually in a small cage, right? Which was a real factor, big factor in the dynamic of that kind of a matchup. Favors the grappler, right? So there's a little bit of that. He comes in, he shows that he's not done, fights smart, respectable loss. Then he loses to Dan Kelly. You all know I champion the shit out of Dan Kelly. And if you don't, I understand. And even if you were, you know, you didn't listen to me and you picked Rashad Evans against him, I actually completely understand why you would pick Rashad Evans against him. But I laid that one out and told you why Dan Kelly's underrated, and he showed it. So, I mean, I think you got to give kind of respect there to that those two losses under the circumstances. And even going back and looking at the Dan Kelly loss, he fucked Judo Dan Kelly up. I mean, if Dan Kelly wasn't, you know, on the Brett Favre V8 juice or whatever he's drinking, that wasn't a steroid insinuation. I love Dan Kelly. That was more of a poor attempt of humor for a Brett Favre joke. But, you know, if he wasn't Dan Kelly, okay, he probably wasn't going to survive that. So major props to him. When you kind of look at all those, maybe there was weren't such condemnable losses for good old Chris Camozzi, who is -245, but I believe I got him at like -210 or -220. Near the opener. I didn't bet him at the opener, but this was probably about 3 days ago when I made that play after completing my analysis on this one. And, you know, yeah, I know some people who I respect, by the way. Some of the junkies I was talking to are on Trevor Smith. But, man, Trevor Smith has just had so many – you know, he's got the wrestling accolades to do it, but he doesn't wrestle as well as those accolades suggest, not just offensively. And I'm not even just talking about the 30 – whatever percent, which is with a statistical rating. Although I will say, y'all know I don't put too much weight into those. Those, in fact, I say all the time, those can even be misleading. But I'm talking about his technique and success overall. And then when you look at his defense, it's even poorer. Now, that won't be too relevant here. I doubt he's going to be defending, you know, double legs and, you know, on bars of guards from, you know, Chris Camozzi. But still, yet, I'm just more making the point that it could be easy to put a little too much weight when we see Division II or whatever these wrestling accolades are all the time. And, you know, Camozzi's brought in some real sizable grapplers in this camp. I even saw he was working with the normal cast of characters. I always remember, forget the strength and conditioning coach in the Muay Thai, I think Factory X. And anyways, I forgot where I was going with that. Yeah, but I mean, he's always got a solid cast as far as I'm going to try to give props to his coaches and training staff. And he's also, of course, got great training partners and fighters in, flying in with them. So I think Camozzi's going to be good for this one. He looks healthy. I don't know Camozzi personally. He didn't seem like a guy to make excuses, but I don't know if he was healthy in the last couple fights too, you know? Because, you know, I heard a member hearing him talk to the guys at Junkie Radio when he came into the studio before his fight with Vitor Miranda, a fight where I picked against him incorrectly. And I remember Camozzi going, I'm really healthy for this camp. And, you know, guys say they're healthy or whatever, but when a guy says it a certain way, especially when he's a certain character of a – or seems like a certain character of a guy, and especially if it's not a baited out or drawn answer and seems genuine, you can really tell when a guy means it. And you could tell where Chris meant it. I'm like, wow, he's really – this seems like a guy that – everyone struggles with injury when they go – all these guys do, right? But Chris seemed like a guy who kind of struggled with that injury. Maybe, you know, that not excuse but helped lend itself some of those inconsistent performances. And I remember going, man, I picked Vitor Miranda, but I don't know. Chris sounds like he is on point. Sure enough, he goes in and wins the fight. And I didn't hear that same Chris in the pre-fight interviews for his last two fights. And then in this fight, I was listening to an interview, and he said, he said something that just totally triggered that same feeling. I'm like, this cat's firing all cylinders. It sounds like so. I'm taking the shot on Chris Camozzi straight up, and I have him in my parlay pieces, and that's why he made a recommended two of the three recommendations, which will come later. But for now, we will close up the prelims with Damian Stasiak versus Pedro Munhoz. He's up to -700 now. I believe he opened up the 5-1 range against Damian Stasiak, which is appropriate. My first thing is I look, okay, well, what's the angle here? Do we got an inside the distance angle or a decision? And I don't know. That's the one thing. Even though I'm no higher on Stasiak after reviewing the tape on him once again, the one thing I will say, and I will credit it to his karate base, although he's very unathletic like myself, so maybe I'm just sympathizing with my man here, but you know, he doesn't show the quote-unquote awkwardness and the fleet of footness that comes on the plus side of having the karate styles. But just from doing karate or any kind of combat sport, something I've preached on here before from age of 6, which is him, you know, how long he's been doing it, just being used to punches and kicks and stuff, you know, being thrown at you, you become comfortable in all positions. And you see that even on the ground. You know, that's why even when he's in bad positions, Stasiak will just stay as calm, controls a guy's posture so he doesn't get hit. He inserts his butterfly hooks, looks to stand back up, reverses position more often than not. Don't think he's going to do that here. Don't think he's even going to give his head given the Pedro Munhoz guillotine threat, right? But the point is, I think he could be more durable than normal. Maybe I'm just still reeling off of my Cub Swanson-Loboff thing where they just that was a prime example of like, man, I should have raked in the dough for that one. And it's kind of a prime example of why my pick percentage is good, but my bank account, not as much. And that was one of those cards where it's like, it's annoying because it's like you can I end on positive, but I'm more mad than nights where I lost because I went all in on some stupid prop inside the distance and then the guy doesn't get finished or whatever and I overexpose myself. So try not to do that, and you know, maybe I'll regret it here for not playing, you know, the Pedro Munhoz inside the distance line, which is, hold with me, I'll give it to you. X gonna give it to you. Sorry, that was really bad. But Junior High Dan comes out with the DMX. Munhoz inside minus 122 TKO sublines, not out. And that's even more trickier shit that I suggest you stay away from. But yeah, that is not on a void, but I have no plays on it because of the line. It's just, it's not juicy enough either way. On either side. So on that beat, let's take a break and we will be back right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast to break down the main card of UFC Stockholm.
In a little cafe just the other side.
Right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast for the UFC Sweden Breakdown Show. And yes, I hope you enjoyed that little playback there. I had to throw in a little bit of the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 soundtrack, Jay and the Americans there, to come a little bit closer. Again, man, great filmmakers will tie music with scenes and make their scenes immortal along with the song. You know, without giving anything away, that song with Yondu, that whole thing, that whole one, it wasn't a one take or anything like a Boogie Nights, obviously, but it's all special effects. But it was so well done. It was awesome. It was right up there with the X-Men Days of Future Past scene where I don't know if it was like the White House, the Pentagon, and they're breaking them out, and Quicksilver, who has like awesome scenes in both movies, but this was the first one, and they do that Jim Croce song. If I could save time in a bottle. That's a badass scene, though. And he's, like, pulling all the bullets. He's adjusting the cops' hats. Like, he's just doing all the stuff while he freezes time. And, yeah, anyways, gotta love One Take. Speaking of what, underrated One Take, Old Boy. No, not whatever that bullshit remake. I'm talking about the original Old Boy. The Hammer One Take. The Hammer in a Hallway. You, like, anyone listen to this podcast obviously likes mixed martial arts. And if you like mixed martial arts, you like actions. You probably like action movies. Go watch Old Boy, just for a mindfuck too, by the way. Watch the whole thing, but there's this one take in the hallway with the hammer. Holy shit. Ugh. Well, Dan Tom's a fan of one take scenes. What are you talking about? You know, the classic Steadicam Goodfellas where they come into the back of the restaurant. Or, you know, again, I just mentioned the Boogie Nights one take, the opening scene from the street and they go into the club. Oh, that's great. Oh, this is great. Oh, man. I have to talk movies more sometime, but not on the Protect Your Neck podcast time, Dan. All right, main card time. First one up on these, oh God, these six fight fucking main cards. It's funny, like they're always like, back when I was an MMA fan, we didn't have six fight main cards. And if they do, they were people that you knew. And shout out to Jedi Goodman, at Jedi Goodman on Twitter. Fucking tweet of the day, and probably still like tweet of the week, was hilarious. I don't know if any of y'all are familiar with the show Eastbound and Down. I only watched like one season, maybe if that, to be honest. But there's this character on there, and he's just fucking hilarious. And he posted this clip saying, you know, looking at the lineup for UFC Sweden. And you play the video, and it's this character going, who the fuck is this guy? Who the fuck are you? It's like Clay Robinson or whatever that guy is. And then, of course, Will Ferrell's character, who like, looks like Ric Flair from the 80s. It's great. Okay, I got to go back and watch Eastbound and Down. But, yeah, not Eastbound and Down. We are talking about, what are we talking about? Wow, Dan. Wow, way to lose track. Oh, yeah, we're talking about UFC Stockholm. That was a funny tweet by Jedi Goodman, though. Anyways, but, yeah, UFC Stockholm. So the first fight on there kicking off is, this one should be action. It's Alex Nicholson versus Jack Hermanson. This one kind of opened like, I believe Hermanson still might have been, they still might have favored the right guy, but it was like one of those minus 105, minus 110 bullshit where they just want the public to do the dirty work. But I thought it was a bit more clear, even though Alex Nicholson's a bit harder to predict because he is like making the fight to fight, or he's in that stage where he's going to make the fight to fight improvements. Not saying he's going to, you know, come out and be a top 10 John Jones world beater or something, but like, you look at his age and you look at the fight curves, it's clear that there's curvature to be expected, there's growth to be expected, whatever it may be in or out of the cage. But, hopefully, right? And a guy who I've been high on, Jack Hermanson, who just kind of had a weird performance his last time out against Cesar Mutanch in Brazil. Who Mutanch, you know, again, on a renaissance of his own. I mean, it was kind of one fight away and one knockout away to being like the worst chin joke in MMA. But he's really collected himself as a martial artist. All his experience from Capoeira to BJJ, now working with MMA masters, you know, really... Again, kind of like the Chris Camozzi stuff, hindsight, right? Hindsight 2020. It's perspective. Perspective works both ways. So kind of playing devil's advocate there. It was kind of a weird fight for a sophomore performance, which, you know, usually is a better performance. And so I want to say Jack Hermanson, despite looking like a diminished calcium deficient European 40. He's actually like 28 or some shit. Boy, Dan, you should know it. Why don't you pull it up? You only broke that one down. Yeah, he's 28. Wow, I was right. God, he looks fucking older, right? It's like dudes on the East Coast, like in America, like people on the East Coast always look older. And it's like, I was joking, man, East Coast friends. I'm like, it's pollution and stress. But I don't know what's going on with Hermanson, but he does look like the Joker though. So that is a well-deserved nickname. I essentially think he's going to be able to, extinguish the efforts of Nicholson. Hermanson has not been stopped himself. He's pretty durable. I mean, as far as, you know, chin, I mean, he's been submitted, obviously. Got submitted in his last fight and submitted early on in his career, but really, he's really good on the ground. I really like what I see. Not just from the wrestling, but like, when you go back and watch his fight with Carlos Vemola, he shows the exact chaining you want to see. Like, he's, when the guy goes to post, he's securing his triangle, but he also wants to secure his posture. So sometimes grabbing the head isn't enough, and you grab the head, but the guy's flexing his shoulder and standing up. So if you're a grappler, you understand what I'm saying. When you have a triangle locked on a guy and he tries to rampage you, or not even rampage you, like to slam you, but just tries to kind of posture up and get out, right? And you'll go to control the head and the posture with your free hand. And sometimes it won't be enough because maybe you didn't lock the triangle great in the first place, or you didn't get your adjustment, or maybe you actually locked it on pretty decently. But again, they posture, they know how to kind of flex their shoulders, turn their body to where it loosens your triangle grip. You see Hermanson do the smart thing where I won't grab the head, I'll grab the shin, but the lower shin. People will grab the foot and stuff like that. It's very weak, but you grab your own shin, and that helps control posture, but then also helps support the triangle structure that you're trying to submit your opponent with. So it's kind of killing two birds with one stone. And you listen to me preach on here, even though I'm fucking nobody, believe me, there's way better people out there qualified. But for what my opinion's worth, what makes really good grapplers is when you can double duty and double delegate anytime as much time as possible. And that is killing two birds with one stone. And not only would he grab, you know, his lower shin, you would see when Carlos Vemola raises up, he hooks the leg, which is frowned upon. I have coaches who taught me to do it, who I respect, and I have coaches who I really respect who, you know, say no, because, you know, in MMA, all, you know, if you go to hook a leg to kind of cut your angle on an arm bar or cut your angle and adjust your angle on a triangle, underhooking a kind of a underneath the knee, to be more specific, to non-grapplers, it's great leverage. I love it, especially for non-athletic people like myself. But, you know, with the MMA gloves, all the other person, all someone has to do is when you underhook the leg with an MMA glove, is just kind of sit their ass down and then trap your arm, because it's kind of hard to pull with not just the friction of weight sitting down, you know, you're having your wrists essentially stuck between their calf and back of their thigh. But with the glove, it kind of makes like a trap, right? Because now it's kind of a thickness to your extremity that's not normally there. So you're trapped and you get punched in the face. Not fun. But if a guy is kind of tripoding and you're pretty much locked in, I say it's a safe gamble. The other one a lot of people will teach is you just kind of use your typical underhook. So you'll underhook their arm to gain leverage. It's a little bit of a shorter, a little bit of a tighter grip, but just as applicable and if not, probably safer to go with. But you just see Hermanson kind of go through these examples and real fine details that tell me he knows what he's doing, that he'll be a cut above even an improved Alex Nicholson. I think he's going to be able to, at the very least, stifle him in the clinch. You know, Alex Nicholson has shown improved wrestling fundamentals. It's about a real low sample size, mind you, to draw from him in his last few fights. But he's showing those improvements in those fundamentals. The problem is I think Hermanson can just neutralize him in the clinch, and that'll wear him down. Nicholson does not have a lot of options in the clinch as I initially thought he did. He is just as likely to spin elbow. Oddly enough, he's athletic and explosive and will find the craft enough to manage a spin when being pressed in the clinch up against the cage, but he won't do typical frame strikes. Whereas Hermanson, his best strikes are his dirty boxing inside the clinch. I think he's a better striker inside the clinch than he is at range. But at range, he'll have a check hook, which I think will serve him well against Alex Nicholson, who at least as of late has been more of a pressure fighter. Whereas before, he would kind of circle on the outside with his weird kind of low-handed boxing stance, which he still kind of keeps that low hand, which is bad. But he would kind of do the fake paw jab and just really set up spinning shit. He's putting more of a process now in the past couple fights, but I think Hermanson has answers. So I think Hermanson takes this. I don't know if it's inside the distance or not. This is a fight where you want to think it will go, and you know, there's no way this makes a decision, but that's what I thought with Sam Alvey and Alex Nicholson, and even Brian Stan said so on the broadcast. There's no way this goes to decision, and it did. So I ain't touching that shit. I'll probably play Hermanson straight up. I think I already did, actually, just because it's a really low number. Well, what is the number, Dan? -155 right now. It was lower than that when I played it. I believe it was like -115 or -120 or something like that. And right now the comeback on Alex Nicholson, if you like him, you're getting +135. But not enough juice to play either heavily, in my opinion, especially the dog. But if you are going to play it, yeah, I could see a dog or pass argument there. Excuse me. Because, yeah, Nicholson does have that intangible to knock Hermanson out. Hence, Hermanson is not on any of the major plays list. So, next fight, Nordine Taleb, who opened at a heavy 4-1 favorite, now -535, and Oliver Edenkamp coming back at +420. I think this line is off, although I do agree with the favorite, as my pick here is Nordine Taleb. I think he's going to do it by decision, and it's going to be a learning experience for Edenkamp, who, fuck, man, to learn all this shit about this kid, but I can't find his height or anything, and the UFC doesn't have it. Watch, they probably have it now that like I'm talking about it on the podcast. They probably updated this on this here Wednesday, but as of this morning, they did not. Yep, they still don't have this kid's height or his reach or a picture or any of that shit. And I go bust my ass and watch every film and footage on this kid possible, from karate, kickboxing, Muay Thai, and MMA. And UFC ain't doing your job and can't even put the damn pictures up. Sorry, a little frustrating. I like having like a nice like display and certain things. And again, I'm not just the analyst. I'm also the whatever, production web, whatever bullshit at MixedMartialAnalyst.com. So I like the breakdowns looking good, and I had to kind of go old school with the pictures and anyways, stuff that's not important. Oliver Edenkamp, however, talented kid. I think he's got a future. Again, I'm not picking him to win here, but born into martial arts, literally born into a martial arts gym, parents own a karate dojo. Grew up doing karate and the other martial art I wasn't too familiar with, and looked it up. It made sense. It was weapons, so not really relevant to mixed martial arts. But as soon as he was like 16 or 17, just jumped right into amateur kickboxing, amateur MMA. At 18, even went over to Thailand, had his first pro Thai fight, and did very well. And was fucking schooled the kid. Legit, looked like a legit Thai kid too. Went undefeated in the short stint in that, which was maybe only a handful of fights and handful of amateur kickboxing fights. I believe only lost one. It's different records varying, but I believe he said he's somewhere like 18-1 or something. Only, I don't know how he lost that fight. I couldn't find any record of that as an amateur. So he's experienced there, and yeah, 7-0 as a pro. Very tall. I'm guessing about 6 foot, right around 6 foot. You know, in interviews, you know, as late as about 3 years ago, he was saying he was having trouble making 155. That's why you see him kind of veering away from catchweights and 161-pound catchweight fights to just welterweight fights. And in this, I don't want to say back half of a 7-fight career, but you get what I'm saying. In the back half, he's been a consistent welterweight, so it sounds like he's just going to be growing and settling into that frame. So good for him on that, but Nordin Taleb is a huge, in the parlance of our president. Sorry, not a Trump fan, don't worry. But he's a huge welterweight, Nordin Taleb is. I think it's going to be a factor here. You know me, I'm not usually a size guy, but Nordin Taleb, not just size, again, TriStar, he is like, I mean, he's athletic, he's big, he's strong. I'll say he's not athletic, he's a specimen in that right, but as far as like mobility-wise, he's a bit choppy, maybe because he got into martial arts late. He is 35 years old, didn't grow up with it, but Nordin Taleb does demonstrate the things I was talking about previously with, you know, Fraz Zahavi trying to instill those fundamentals in the fighters. You know, he has the jab fundamentals, he has the wrestling basics and the ring generalship. And then he has his knack for Muay Thai, where he's actually, you know, went and trained more extensively in recent camps. And you see that, you know, he's got really, Nordin Taleb, really accurate leg and body kicks, and he's really good at capitalizing and catching kicks, which, you know, end camp will have to be careful of. You know, we saw it happen to Eric Silva, but end camp is a much better kicker than Eric Silva. End camp, too, has a knack for making guys pay for kicks. End camp has the edge, in my opinion, standing. He has the edge, the intangibles, and the skills to score an upset here. I'm not going to lie. I sprinkled a little bit on him, and I just stayed away from Taleb, even though Taleb's the pick, just for fun. Because in the breakdown, I say, you know, I do state his case, and I also do state, you know, my karate bias, too. You know, I do want to see guys like that do well, but I'm realistic. I think Taleb's going to extinguish him here in the clinch, kind of similar to Hermanson, take him down to the ground where, you know, Taleb uses his good hip positioning, hand fighting, and ground striking. That being said, Taleb's not going to be able to sleep, you know, much less be compromised on the ground, because he could lose the fight there, too. And Camp can finish from many positions. He's a little too happy to be on the ground for my liking. His wrestling has improved. He shows the fundamentals that are there, but these aren't the biggest wrestling threats as far as tactically or physically, so it's really hard to say where exactly Enkamp's wrestling is, and I don't want to come down too hard on it, but I think it is fair to say it's his weakest link. I think he would say that too. So he's got a really active and attacking guard, though, more than your average. I'm not a big fan of it. It's ultimately you want to fight from bottom, you're going to lose on scorecards 9 times out of 10. And I'm a jiu-jitsu fan. I'm a guard fan. I'm a guard play fan, you know, but I'm realistic in MMA when it comes to that. So I'm not high on guard guys, but this kid does look like he has some real legit tools in his guard as far as he chains. He goes boom, boom. And he doesn't just chain, but he'll kind of, you know, elevate and back roll to his base and turtle up to stand and use the scrambles to stand. So not wrestling in the traditional sense, but he is a good scramble creator. And you know I love me some scramblers. So it's going to be a fun fight to watch there. But no major plays for me on that one. The next fight is Omari Akhmedov versus Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, who is the second piece in our parlay. Yes, this is the prospect I am much higher on. Not the 7-0 Silva, who I did pick, but the 7-0 Al-Hassan. Because he really just watch the way this guy leg kicks, the way he whips it. I mean, the baseball bat thing is abused, but he really does. I mean, you can just see the athleticism in the way he whips it and takes on a striking. He, you know, I say in the supplemental info, my breakdown on mixedmartialanalyst.com, he's a Al-Hassan has a good sense of striking. He really does. He really does have that preternatural sense. I mean, he's pulling and returning like a pro, and that's not even his forte. He came up doing judo. And we haven't gotten to see too much of his ground game, but the judo does hold where you think as far as freakish athlete in the clinch. Strong, good takedown defense, base and balance. We've seen guys have not just caught Al-Hassan's kicks, but elevated Al-Hassan's foot over his shoulder. And his flexibility, leg dexterity, and adaptability was amazing in the way he was just circling, walking back to the cage, and then retaking his limbs and resetting himself back to the floor without being taken down. The dude's a freak, and we've seen him pressure and you know, get caught with a check hook, which, you know, Akhmedov's going to have. I mean, Akhmedov's always a guy who's one shot away from engaging in a war, but really he's always circling the outside and waiting for you to engage because he is just going to counter and do collisions on his strikes. Akhmedov plants and just does typical, real predictable even, I dare say, left to right continuums. That Al-Hassan will still have to respect, but we've seen Al-Hassan, you know, in his Bellator fight, the man's name's escaping me, but you see him take a check hook, and he doesn't look dropped or stunned or anything, but he wisely backs up, allows the guy to play back into him, and hits him with the strike that he originally hit him with in the first place, and closes the show, because even though he's pressuring, Al-Hassan is pressuring, I should say, and bullying with those aforementioned leg kicks, really, he's got that right hand in mind, that overhand, that uppercut, and it's devastating. And it's going to be there because Akhmedov has super porous head movement, keeps his lead hand low, and right hands are his common culprit. I mean, if being TKO'd in two of your last three fights isn't bad enough, though, I'm usually the guy that'll be like, don't, the stats will mislead you there, but forget the two out of three. I think Omari Akhmedov's another guy that I believe has been dropped and or stunned in five of his last six just because of his style. I don't think it's going to do well for him here. I hope Omari Akhmedov, you know, uses his power double, which he actually has some veteran savvy to as far as his timing. He's not the most quickest or most slickest as far as his transition game goes, but you know, his timing on when to do it is good. So I'm hoping he hits something like that so we can actually get some information collected on Al-Hassan on the ground. Even, God forbid, hopefully we get some information on Al-Hassan outside of the first round, but I think Al-Hassan closes shop early on this one, boys and girls. And that's why he is a recommended piece for the parlay, especially at the price. I believe I got him around the minus 220 range. Right now, he is minus 255, so it's growing a bit. And he is also our one of two props, even though the line is officially not out yet. We have Al-Hassan by TKO. Right now, the inside the distance is minus 173. It was minus 111 when I first looked at it. And that obviously still wasn't enough. And I think it's going to be a TKO here, unless he really wants to make a statement with his submission game. But Akhmedov has good sub-defense and is too tough for his own good and is too hittable for his own good. So I think it's a TKO. So as soon as that comes out, I'm going to lay something on there. All right, next fight, Peter Sabata, who is back to a plus 100 as he originally opened as the underdog. No, he's not. Oh, yeah, yes, he is, to a minus 120 Ben Saunders. So the line looks like it kind of shifted right about back where it was. I am on Sabata on this. This is my pick. And it's not on a fight to avoid. I'm not copping out here. I think he should win. I mean, it's not that the odds makers are terribly wrong. It's a close line, you know. No one's terribly wrong here. This is MMA. Ben Saunders is talented. I'm a fan of Ben Saunders, so part of me is rooting for him here. But I played, my pocketbook's rooting for Sabata because I played him. Sabata is, you know, it's tough because he's a deceptive sample size. He's only been fighting like once a year the past couple of years. And I think we put a little bit too much weight into the TKO loss to Kyle Noak because you look at the TKO losses before that or his record. He's victory, defeat. Peter Sabata is super durable. That Kyle Noak kick, that was simply just a really perfectly placed kick, you know, not to take away anything from Noak. It just was a perfectly placed kick. If anything, that's crediting Noak. But I think that's all it was, though. And although that's, you know, Ben Saunders, one of his best weapons standing is those body kicks, especially from the southpaw stance, which he primarily fights from. It could be something to watch for, but Sabata has great body kicks from his own from the southpaw stance and has improved his boxing and countering, especially with the right hand. We saw him hit that kind of slip shovel hook up jab to Dalby to knock him down and sway the momentum of that fight to his favor to win a pretty clear decision over Nicholas Dalby there. And so I really like Sabata. He's showing that he's putting in the work between these fights, so it's not he's showing that it's not so much a negative intangible as maybe it normally would be when a guy has so much time off between fights. The work is paying off. And you know, although Ben Saunders is one of the few guys who can fighters who can hold a candle to the rubber guard argument in MMA, I don't think he's going to catch anything with Sabata here. Sabata is a legit champion in and out of the gi. Dean Lister trained to boot, and quietly one of the better guard passers at welterweight too. And that's probably because he models his game after his idol Damian Maia. Although not so much with the dope mounts and the weave passes, but he will pressure pass and use the shoulder pressure and push down to the mount and kind of ride the three quarter. Just does great work from the half guard. So I see him passing the openings that the rubber guard tends to have, because if the rubber guard doesn't stall, it often opens up a pass when a guy goes to go to the mission control and guy will pass the lower leg. It's kind of a give and take there. You see happen a lot. Again, Ben Saunders is one of the better guys, so it might not. I'm not saying it will, but what I am saying is Sabat is legit, and I got him here. All right, next fight, co-main event, Volkan Ozdemir. Is he top 5 ranked light heavyweight or some shit? Jesus. Yeah, but anyways, against Misha Sirkinov. And Sirkinov, the justified favorite, although I felt this was, you know, despite making fun of Ozdemir's ranking, I feel that this line's a little wide. Misha Sirkinov is a favorite, minus 450, and Ozdemir plus 360. Maybe that's the reason why I stayed away from Sirkinov for a playable piece for your parlay. I actually thought it was going to skyrocket way past the 4-1 opener that it's been kind of hovering around. But I think Ozdemir is live. I mean, he's got a striking advantage on him, even though Misha Sirkinov is more of kind of the Frankenstein lumbering light heavyweight version of a Rafael Dos Anjos, as far as he's getting a grasp of his southpaw pressure fighting tools. He's got a really good left cross that I see being good for Ozdemir, and as far as the left body kick too, because again, Ozdemir is the more traditional Shaolong defense. And we saw OSP have success with his traditional body kicks and left hands. Just OSP's real extra questionable fight of IQ as of late really bit him in the ass there and costed him that fight. So I suspect Sirkinov to use that, but mainly try to push to the clinch where he makes his money and gets guys down. Now, Ozdemir has a good left hook that could really, he throws really well as a check and coming forward that I see being live here, could really take Sirkinov to task, which also kind of scared me. Although there is a major prop play here, which I'll get to in 1 second. But what it comes down to is, well, let's talk about the prop play. What it comes down to is the prop play is Sirkinov by submission, which I believe you can't get it for plus money anymore as I'm talking to you. But if you're following the breakdown, the line was fresh and still at a plus 100 for Sirkinov by submission. Let's see what you're getting for it now. Oh, it's plus 100 right now. It went back down there. So you still get it for plus 100. I think... Ozdemir is really underrated. He's working, by the way, at Combat Club again, South Florida, Henry Hooft. And he's been putting clear work in his wrestling. Like, he does all the fundamentals correctly as far as high hoisting overhooks, underhook urgency, hip awareness, basing out correctly, pointing his hips the right way. Just the overall urgency to stand and get back to his feet, turtling out the right way. But it's going to be dangerous because he does like to turtle out. And at light heavyweight, it's a little safer because there's not a lot of back takers, right, at light heavyweight. It's not like there's a bunch of formigas hanging out at light heavyweight, right? And, you know, you have to worry about that at the lighter weight divisions. But, like I said, with that Stipe and Overeem breakdown, turtling out the stand will give way to a front headlock. So if a guy has a good guillotine. And not only did Sirkinov show us that he is crafty from the front headlock and his choke acumen off that position, he showed that in the Krylov fight, where he hit the same arm in kind of variation boa guillotine that Ricardo Lamas hit on Dennis Bermudez. But Sirkinov, speaking of back takers and vacant, I will argue that he's one of the best back takers in the division because he's just so processed about the way he rides and strikes his way into position and methodically takes guys back and just does it to finish, doesn't need your chin, and just crushes. And I think just, you know, despite Ozdemir's improvements, all he has to do is touch ground once and just initiate a transition, and he's gonna possibly find himself in quicksand. So I played Sirkinov by submission. I think he's gonna get a heel naked choke, but we'll see. That probably just means Ozdemir's gonna beat him with the left hook, right? All right, main event time and the final play. We have Alexander Gustafsson as a favorite, minus 320. Comeback on Glover Teixeira, plus 260. I believe I got Gus at like minus 285 territory earlier in the week, as he is the third recommended piece for the parlay. I love Teixeira. I really do. But I think speed's going to be a huge factor here, you know, and that's kind of the thing. If guys can push Teixeira against the fence or outmove him, they're pretty good. They're pretty good, you know? And as long as they don't have just, you know, absolute hard wrestling and ground skills for it. Because again, Teixeira is an underrated wrestler. But, I don't see it. You want to talk underrated wrestler, Alexander Gustafsson taking down Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier, showing it's not a fluke. And, you know, when guys chase him, he has that to stifle the pressure. And I think he's going to be able to use that here against Glover. Now, what does worry me is even though he has the fleet of foot and volume and length and all these advantages Gustafsson has over Glover, we saw Gustafsson do more of a planted kind of approach against Jan Błachowicz in his last fight, and that troubles with me. If he does that against Glover, I mean, we know Glover, he throws the same thing, but it's predictable, but it's dangerous, right? He prods with the right hand to get you to bait on exchange, and he has that cleanup hitting left hook at the ready. And it's mean. Boy, is it mean. But when you talk about left hands, I actually think Glover is more culpable to left hands. I mean, when you look at it, especially like check hooks from Jon Jones to even Bader, because Bader rocked him before he finished him. These were by left hands because Glover is often leaning in with that aforementioned right hand he leads off with. And he's good at leading off with the right hand. But the problem with leading with your cross and leading with your power side is that's a technique that gets more risky with age because it's speed and timing based. So anything speed and timing based gets really risky when you get older and when you're playing with heavier odds, right? When you're a heavier weight division, there's more knockout power, there's more to lose, less room for error. And we've seen that with Glover. Even with the Johnson knockout, that was an uppercut. It was a check hook that put him in line to get hit with that uppercut. So that's what I kind of laid out in the breakdown for this fight here. And, you know, shovel hooks, check hooks, jabs, check jabs. That's Gustafsson's wheelhouse. I think if he finds his range there, I think he's going to piece up Teixeira. And I think Teixeira's going to put up a heroic effort. But I ultimately think that Gustafsson will be deciding the terms of where this fight takes place. And wanting to make a statement at home and just kind of seeing the trend with Teixeira, the speed trend, and I hope not the durability trend, but maybe even that. I see maybe like a fourth round finish here, a third or fourth round late finish inside the distance, like accumulation to strikes kind of thing for Gustafsson to come up on top, as he, yes, is our recommended parlay piece. So, yeah, that's it. That's UFC Sweden. I don't know. I'm sure we'll do some type of recap or after party or whatever. Maybe I'll do some impromptu podcast. I was almost wishing I brought my microphone down to talk shit with all the junkies while everybody's in town, man. This is just really fun. I'm going to go to Texas Day Brazil. Probably go, maybe go hang out, go to Boomers, maybe with cold coffee there and have some beers because I'm not doing the Prince show. There's a lot of, nothing against Prince, or the Prince tribute show, but I just didn't get tickets to that. So I don't know if I'll be going to tomorrow's events for the Junkie Gathering Thursdays, but Fridays I'll be doing that. The Royal Rumble Party, Texas Day Brazil. I think I'm a team captain for Trivia Night on Saturday. So if you're on the strip or in Vegas, come say what's up and just thanks for saying what's up. All the junkies, man. I feel bad. I mean, I'm forced to be more social now that I'm out in the open here, but, Danton was pretty antisocial for a minute, man. I'm one of the longer listeners to the show and I actually live in Vegas and I'm actually friends with the fucking show host. And this is probably the most, you know, 8 years later, this is probably the most active I've been with it all. And everybody's been just so fucking cool. And just to hear actually people actually like listen to my shit and then listen to this nonsense, thank you. It was really good meeting you. Sorry if I'm awkward. Sorry if I didn't give you the proper shout out. I tried to get to everybody today with beers. I'm gonna bring some more beers and go hijack some of y'all tomorrow morning. But it was, I can't say it enough. Just meeting fucking genuinely cool people. I can't say more. That's what this community is about. So if you're about making the community, feel free to reach out. Use hashtag ProtectYourNeckPodcast to reach out. Suggestions, ideas, questions to me. I'll answer them in the show. Even if you want fucking ask random questions, whatever. I don't give a shit. Let's get more interactive on here, because that is one thing I think we can all take from MMA Junkie Radio and the example. Wow, I'm having trouble fucking finding my words. It's late. I got to get some rest. They set there. So interaction's always great. So thank you. Please, the best thing you can do is share this with a friend. Follow us on Twitter at the PYM Podcast. At the MM Analyst is me. All episodes, all breakdowns, articles, mixedmartialanalyst.com. Plenty of room on there for sponsorship. If anybody's looking, want to get some advertising, I should say. Not sponsorship. Well, sponsorship too, sure. But advertising, same here on the podcast. If anybody's in the market for that. Otherwise, you know, the best thing you can do, though, really, share a friend, reach out, and keep this thing going, man. I really love this. It's the only thing that keeps me doing this. Definitely a passion project. Weeks like this make me want to bash my head into the computer screen sometimes, because it just feels like I put way too much, you know, work into this to not care so much, I guess. You know, it's hard to not care so much and take things so to heart. But, man, I do. I really love this stuff. Yeah, it means a lot. I'm going to stop fucking ranting and rambling right there. Any more shout-outs to take care of, anything like that? Shout-out to Roger Moore. Fucking James Bond died, right? Man with the Golden Gun. Underrated ending. Great gunfight there. Is that fucking Christopher Lee? A young Christopher Lee? Yes, Christopher Lee. Roger Moore. Yes, Moore. Imagine if it was like... Oh, I wish we had that James Bond, like the real Roger Moore James Bond, right? The gay Roger Moore. Like, man, imagine that, just hitting on bus boys, be a complete different James Bond. Complete different mention to Shaken Not Stirred. All right, before I go down that fucking rabbit hole, the stirring tribute to Roger Moore right there. Wow, Dan, that was a stirring tribute to Roger Moore. Pat yourself on the back and take a bow, you fucking savage. Yeah, all right, cool. I'll see y'all later. Enjoy, good luck with the picks, and until next time, protect your neck.